Exactly what sort of demonstration does he have planned?
Unknown, he wouldn't even tell us. Just said it would showcase Earth's dominant police system.
I don't hear any drums.
Or bells. Or chants.
All right. We're all set. If you'll come this way. This is Mr. Harris. He's an atheist. Father Crisanti, a Roman Catholic. Mr. Hayakawa, a Zen Buddhist. Mr. Rashid, a Muslim. Mr. Rosenthal, an Orthodox Jew. Running Elk of the Eklalasu faith. Father Papopoulos, a Greek Orthodox. Ojijiko of the Igbo tribe. Chukiak, a Yupik Eskimo. Sawa of the Hivaro tribe. Ms. Nakruma, a Bantu. Ms. Chang, a Taoist. Mr. Blacksmith, an Aborigine. Ms. Yamamoto, a Shinto. Ms. Naijo, a Maori. Mr. Go, a Hindu. Ms. Nakruma.
Dorkness to Light. Hosted by Alan and M. Middleton.
We aim to explore what takes place at the corner of theology and geekology.
Episode 34, Babylon 5, Monks in Space.
Welcome to episode 34 of Dorkness to Light. This is our show where we take a look at pop culture in terms of where those stories intersect with concepts in religion, faith, theology, and spirituality. And in this episode, we're talking about one of our favorite sci-fi TV shows, and also one of the sci-fi shows that deals with religion and religious topics the best.
The name of the show is Babylon 5.
But we are not alone. At one point in time, maybe on the show or maybe in the back channels, I actually don't remember, but at some point a few years ago, we mentioned that Babylon 5 was an obvious candidate to be covered on this show. And one of our internet buddies reached out and said, if we talked about that without talking to him, that would be a bad move on our part. And now we have finally gotten around to doing that. So welcome to the show, the hair metal hero himself, all the way from the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network.
Hi, guys.
It's Chris Tyler. Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me on.
Welcome, welcome.
I've been looking forward to this for quite a while.
I can't remember when you revealed yourself to us as a Babylon 5 fan, but at that point, we knew this conversation had to happen at some point.
I don't know when it was either. It's been a while.
My best guess was that it was episode 5?
About three and a half years ago
when we talked about Ms. Marvel, and we're saying, man, there are some really great, like, religious figures in geeky pop culture, but the best one, of course, is Brother Theo from Babylon 5. That's not even a question. And then you were like, hey.
There's a lot of stuff in Babylon 5. And then Chris, I think, is it? Yes. Well, here you are, so thank you.
Thank you.
And this is a religious podcast, but with no particular affiliation or theological checklist. So, if you are comfortable and willing, we would invite you to share your, if you would pardon the expression, sacred origin with us, Chris.
For the one, I die for the one joke, but I will hold off on that. I was baptized Roman Catholic. I still am practicing Roman Catholic. You know, you can take that however you'd like. There's probably some lapses in there in certain respects, but I don't really know anything else to be. And I'm comfortable with that. So I guess that's
good. Yeah. Nice. Nothing wrong with that.
That's a pretty boring story there. You know, born and raised. So there you go.
Well, then, let's talk about how we all got into Babylon 5. Maybe that'll be a better story.
That is a better story.
So I'll just say for me, I mean, this show ran from 94 to 98, and I was pretty busy around that time trying to raise somebody.
Some young whippersnapper.
We were busy in our small church trying to get an academic career going and all that stuff. So I missed it the first time around. And I found it after the fact on DVDs from the library, after hearing, probably on a podcast or two, that Babylon 5 was a really good show with a really great reputation. Now, Em can expound on this, but you pretty much found it through me.
Yeah.
In one of my rewatches. So. Or
that you had watched most or all of it.
Probably.
And we're just sort of mentioning, like, hey, this show is really good. By the way, if you're ever bored, you know, you should give this a listen. And I think it was probably either my senior year of college or right when I graduated and was back home that I was
you took the deep dive yourself.
Yeah. I was like, I need something to like sort of cleanse myself of finally getting out of school for the first time in 15 years.
Yeah.
I was like, I need something that I can sort of sink my teeth into. Yeah. And Babylon 5 was that. I'm pretty sure I blasted through the first three seasons in about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then mentioned to you that I was doing that, and you were like, well, would you be willing to start over from the beginning? And I was like, oh no, I'm going to have to watch the first three seasons of Babylon 5 twice in a month. How terrible.
Oh, that's awesome.
It worked out. How about you, Chris?
I remember reading about it coming out in, and I can't remember which magazine it was. It was probably either, oh God, I don't even know at this point. Probably back in 93, before it had even hit. And it was about the same time that Deep Space Nine was going to hit. So obviously they were doing, you know, contrasting things there and talking about which one's going to be better and blah, 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 blah. But that's apples and oranges. I did end up.
Or which one stole from the other? Not that we're better, but okay, that's all we're going to say.
True, true. I believe I did see the pilot movie that was on in syndication, and then it kind of fell off my radar. The reason it fell off my radar is because syndicated on the Boston Channel that it was on, at 11 p.m. on Sunday nights. So, and I was a sophomore in high school when it started, so staying up at 11 o'clock to 12 o'clock on a Sunday night right before school really wasn't going to fly. That being said, about 2 years into its run, my buddy that I attended school with, also a big nerd, said, have you seen this show Babylon 5 yet? And I said, I think I remember seeing the pilot, but where is it? I can't even find it. He said, so it's on this late at night. And I was like, okay, I got to start watching it. Didn't get around to it until he said, the third season just ended. You need to watch this show.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then
he was not wrong. It's a good friend.
So then I went ahead to track down the ones that I could, and I wasn't really able to watch it all the way through until it hit TNT. So
right.
But yeah, I was there not right from the beginning, but pretty close. So yeah, since then, since about 97, as I was finishing up high school, it's been a part of my life.
We knew early on that the show was going to be just a little different from other sci-fi shows and how it dealt with religion. The clip we played at the start of the show is the fourth or fifth episode. Is that maybe even earlier than that?
Yeah.
Fifth episode of season one, where it sort of just comes out and says, hey, this isn't Star Trek.
Yes.
Which is no slam to Star Trek, but we are definitely doing something different. We're sort of setting ourselves apart in the way that we're doing our world building. And for me, having just come out of a comparative religion and sociology background in college was so refreshing. The show just set so many things up from that first season, which even though due to filming complications and casting and personal issues, not everything from that first season was able to pan out exactly according to plan. But really setting the tone, even from episodes 4, 5, or 6 for what was going to happen for the rest of the series and following up on that, on those threads, it is like incomparable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was going to be one of the points that I was going to make, is that it's not Star Trek. And I think that, and I love Star Trek. It's one of my favorite things in all of existence. But the fact that it did not shy away from, yes, it's the future, yes, the humans are living in it, but religion hasn't suddenly just completely disappeared. And I think that was, in some ways, more human than what Star Trek does, as much as I love it. And that's one of the things that absolutely grabbed me right from the beginning as well, is that it was completely different, and it wasn't washing away the shared experience of, you know, thousands of years of of humanity.
That's a point that J. Michael Straczynski, the creator of the show and showrunner from here on, just called JMS for short. Mm-hmm. One of the things that JMS said and talking about that was, like you were hinting at, Chris, I mean, this is an institution, one of the earliest human institutions. It's been around 3,500 years we've had faith in religion. To think that in 250 it'll be gone is just unrealistic.
Yes.
And if you're going to do a realistic, quote unquote, show, you have to include that. And it's not even just the aliens.
Yeah.
You know, some shows talk about religious themes and ideas in the sort of context of, well, that's this alien belief. He brought it into the human belief, into the human characters as well. And I thought one instructive thing he did, in addition to sort of talking about the current religions on Earth, he actually, I think, through the character of Dr. Franklin, he was actually a practitioner of a new to us, a non-existent religion to us that had sprung up in the last, you know, in the 200 years since. So I thought that was also a really interesting choice, that you know, he's saying that not only is this a long-standing human institution that will continue, it'll also change and flourish and adapt as time goes by.
We will definitely be talking about that some, talking about the monks mm-hmm. that we have in this series, but I wanted to take a moment and talk about how good his world building is and how solid his sociology is, because it is genuinely mind-boggling to me, because some of the traps that people fall into when they're doing religious world building, especially in a sci-fi show like this, is saying, hey, we're going to take this real world human religion and we're not going to acknowledge that there are real world active practitioners of this religion on Earth, but we're going to give it to some alien.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like really kind of dismissive. To be like, yes, let's take these Zen Buddhist concepts, and instead of just saying, hey, that's a Zen Buddhist concept, a thing that exists on Earth, we're going to give it a weird alien name and throw it off into space.
Yeah.
It's a similar concept behind the people who do conlangs, or constructed languages, for sci-fi and fantasy TV shows. That there was an interview with one of the people who does that, who's a professional linguist, who created Dothraki. And I think may have also invented Klingon, might have been the same guy. And talking about his work, and someone said, well, why don't you just use a language that people don't know? And he's like, well, because it already exists, and there's going to be some person who's going to be watching it who speaks that language and is going to be like, that's not Dothraki. That's Taino.
Right, that's something, right, that's
and
something else.
And he's like, that's not, that it breaks the fiction and it disrespects the people who might actually be watching it. You can't just skirt around the edges and take shortcuts like that. And JMS does not take shortcuts when it comes to his religion. And so for creating the alien religions, there is some things that we could sort of see indicative of belief systems on Earth, but that's more because those belief systems are sort of dealing with universal feelings and how you would rationalize something that every sentient being feels. And not just being like, let's just take this and throw it off somewhere else. I also really appreciated in that clip that we played at the beginning, because this was the mid-90s, and this was shockingly rare. Not only are there Native Americans in the lineup of people, but J. Michael Straczynski and his writing team took the time to figure out what their actual tribe names are. and named them by tribe instead of just being, here's Running Elk and he's a Native American. They found, okay, the name Running Elk would come from this tribe, and the name that they use for themselves is this. We're not just going to be like, and he's Navajo. Like, well, no. Let's do some actual research, figure out who that would be. Yeah. And there's like 6 or 7 individual tribes that are all named from all over the world. And like that sort of dedication to be like, we're going to be realistic to what's happening now, and we're going to be realistic to the way that people interact with religion and will react with it in the future is great, especially coming from an atheist when he could have taken those shortcuts and could have made assumptions, took the time to do that research, is just like.
He also put Jews in space and didn't have it be a joke. So
that also
yeah, those, the Ivanova and the father and the sitting Shiva for him. Yeah. What a stunning couple of episodes that was.
I had a lot of religious education. I did go to a Jesuit high school and a Jesuit college, but some of that stuff exposed me to some of the, you know, the more serious Jewish religious beliefs. And I, you know, just as a kid, that's rare to see. It as much as great as my education was, seeing it on a sci-fi show in the mid-90s, you know, nothing else did that. Those episodes where Ivanova, you know, acknowledges her faith, you know, and her background, her Russian Jewish background, really still hit me to this day because it is so real, and it's not just, you know. I'm going to mention Star Trek again, and you mentioned the Native Americans. Chakotay was Native American. He was Native American. That was it. That was his whole character. You know, even Straczynski at least acknowledged that there were multiple different Native American groups.
Right.
No.
There is actually a very funny story about this that we heard from Claudia Christian, who played Ivanova, when we were at Gallifrey 1, and there was a big 25-year sort of anniversary of Babylon 5 that happened while we were there. And she was telling stories about how at one point when she went to Jerusalem, when she was in Israel, that like the second she landed, and this would have been probably 2005-ish, the minute she stepped off of the plane, there were people everywhere. She was a rock star. And she was like, she sort of didn't get why. Because in her mind, she was like, oh, you know, I'm playing this Russian character, and it's sort of coming out of this like Russians in space kind of tradition, not a Jews in space tradition. But when she landed, she sort of was realizing that all these people were looking at her like a superhero. They were like, you are the only like Jewish person that we see on television, and you are so important. And she very discreetly takes her crucifix and sort of like tucks it down, tucks it down inside her shirt. My last name is Christian, but I recognize like what I'm doing.
The value of this part I played was
really, really important. And sort of like, it kind of recontextualized the way that she thought about her role on the show of like, oh, this was an important thing for lots of people to see that I didn't even totally realize that just by playing this character who was written this honestly and like was living her truth was so important to so many people. I was like, ah,
that's amazing.
That is the Babylon 5 experience.
Yeah.
Right there is being able to like really, really see yourself. And I don't want to hammer it too hard, but like this was the 90s. This could have skid by. This could have not delved as deeply into Catholic monastic traditions. This could have not delved as deeply into creating a consistent theology for Minbari. They could have skipped out in so many areas and in so many ways, and they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's one of those things that if you know that they're Catholic, I mean, other than the fact that Theo has a crucifix, not a cross above his bed, and the fact that Theo says, he mentions the Apostolic See, and if you're not Catholic, then that's just gobbledygook to you.
Right, you know? Over your head.
Yep. Yeah, so it's a way of acknowledging that it's Catholicism without saying he's Catholic, which, you know, it doesn't have to be on the nose, so, you know.
It is the definition of show, don't tell.
Exactly.
He doesn't need to say the word Catholic because he pulls on the traditions that are very specifically Catholic and lives that very specifically Catholic existence through the show.
Well, let's get to this episode then. The sort of focus is on the show called Passing Through Gethsemane. So I guess if you saw that in TV Guide or on the DVD show listing, maybe it's not surprising if you're, again, if that means something to you. This is episode 4 of season 3. And this was written by JMS. And we're just going to go through a quick synopsis. There were two storylines in this episode. We're only going to talk about the episodic storyline, which actually is about two-thirds, yep, three-quarters of the episode, and ignore sort of the arc ongoing, those ongoing elements. And for context, we're in the year 2260 on a space station populated by Earthlings and a range of aliens.
Captain John Sheridan and Second-in-Command Susan Ivanova are introduced to Brother Edward by the Cistercian Order's leader, Brother Theo. Theo considers Edward, played brilliantly by Brad Dourif,
yes,
to be one of the most respected and beloved members of his order. Brother Edward, as part of his calling, meets with the Mimbari Ambassador Delenn and her assistant Lanier to have an enlightening discussion about their respective belief systems. Edward talks about one of his faith's most defining moments, the time that Jesus waited in the Garden of Gethsemane, knowing that he would be taken to crucifixion the next morning, accepting his fate rather than running away. Edward is disturbed when later he sees a black rose fall out of his bag that he does not remember being there. And when he returns to his quarters, he sees the words, "Death walks among us," written on a wall in blood. He contacts Security Chief Garibaldi, but by the time he arrives, the words have disappeared. But Garibaldi offers to investigate further. Edward tells Theo that he feels he might be going insane. When he later returns to his quarters, he brushes shoulders with a Centauri in the hallway. As Edward turns the corner, he has a vision of a young woman being murdered in a back alley. Finding himself back in his quarters and contacting Garibaldi about this experience, Edward begins inputting information from his vision into the computer, trying to search for answers. At the same time, Brother Theo contacts Captain Sheridan, explaining what little knowledge they have about Edward's past, and enlists Sheridan's help in a plan to help protect Edward from his own memories. It is revealed simultaneously to both the captain and Edward himself that originally he was a serial killer known as Charles Dexter, the Black Rose Killer. Dexter had been sentenced to death of personality, a more humane capital punishment that involves wiping out his memories and leaving a new personality behind, one that is dedicated to community service. Sheridan suspects that someone is trying to prey on Edward's past, and Garibaldi confirms that such events had been set up to trigger Edward, such as a temporary paint that was found on the wall of his quarters, and that Brother Edward is now missing. Knowing that death of personality cannot be broken without help from a telepath, Sheridan contacts the Centauri that had touched Edward and brings him in for questioning. When the Centauri won't talk, Sheridan has his own rogue telepath, Lita, use her abilities to find Edward. They converge on the spot to discover that Edward has been beaten unconscious and bound to a piece of metal as if crucified. They discover the lead culprit, one of the family members of those killed by Dexter, who had spent years searching for him. Edward is lowered down, but has suffered mortal injuries. He tells Theo that once he knew his past, he believed it was right to stand up and face it, rather than try to run, following Jesus's example. Theo absolves Edward of all of his sins and prays to God as Edward dies. Sheridan and Theo discuss this tragedy a few weeks later, when Theo introduces a new member of the Order, the same person that led the attack against Edward and was also sentenced to death of personality. Sheridan is initially hostile, but when Theo reminds him about forgiveness and that he will be returning to the monastery on Earth to train him, Sheridan shakes this man's hand and wishes him good luck.
Man, there's a lot going on in that episode.
Oh, boy. And this doesn't touch on the Shadow War. It doesn't touch on telepathic rights.
Earth Force. Man. I will just point out one other thing that JMS specifically pointed out. By the way, if you ever need a deep dive into Babylon 5, the website, The Lurker's Guide, is amazing because it is basically the archive of the online threaded discussions that were going on when the show was on, and JMS replies to many things in that. So most of the quotes, or many of the quotes of JMS talking about the show, are from that site. And there's one specific question that he answered, and that is that no, the other brothers are not mind wiped. It's just these two, just in case anyone wondered. it's just these two. Is there enough forgiveness for what I've done, Father? Always.
It's not an easy episode. It's not one of the breezy ones, and it's not an action one. So, yeah. Yeah, the first time I saw this, I don't even remember what my reaction was, because it goes beyond even just the religious aspects of it in terms of, are you the same person if you don't remember who you were? Which is, I mean, that's one of the biggest philosophical questions of all time. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there's any easy answer to it, but it's when you are confronted with horrific things, what do you do? I don't know. I was trying. I say that I don't make notes. I was trying to make notes watching this.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I don't even know if there's any notes that I can make, because it is you have such a visceral reaction to it. And my reaction at rewatching it again after a couple of years is the same as Sheridan's. I would be hesitant to shake that hand at the end. It's, you know, I'm only human, so.
Right.
Yeah.
I said it at the start, but I want to say it again, that Brother Theo's
pretty great.
Like, the best representation of a monastic order member, just generally the best person, the most genuine, kind, caring, like almost incomprehensibly compassionate person that I can imagine.
He listens well. He's compassionate. He tries to give comfort when needed. He talks, you know, clearly about you know, faith managing and you know, the importance of faith and the role that they play, you know, on the ship. And you know, it's just tremendous.
It's really astounding. I wanted to talk about Brad Dourif's performance.
Man.
Because I don't know if Brad Dourif has ever been asked to play a character more good-hearted and sympathetic than Brother Edward, and he's a serial killer.
That's right.
Have you seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
I have not.
Oh, that's early on for him.
Right? Yeah, that's very different than most of his other roles, and it's one of his first. If you liked his performance in this, you should absolutely seek that movie out for a multitude of reasons, but he's brilliant in it.
And I think JMS, the way he described it was something on the order of, he contacted Dourif's people, he read the script, and then would do anything to play the part. Yeah, he dove for the part, I think, was the way
JMS said. It's a far cry from playing Chucky, so...
Yeah.
And then I just like that the order, their work is learning the names and the faces of God from all our non-human brothers.
God, what a good mission statement. Like, what a good expansion of the Catholic creed, adapted and expanded in a way that makes total theological sense in the future. That is just such a, like, logical progression of a monastic code, which, speaking of which, I love that the thing that they do in the future is digital securities. That's their thing that Brother Edward specifically mentions, like, 1,000 years ago, 800 years ago, we were copying manuscripts by candlelight
illuminating.
And illuminating them. And what we're doing now is we are providing a reliable, inexpensive data transfer encryption service for people to use that is a nonprofit, a nonprofit sort of service to people that they then use the funding from in order to fund their order. Like, it's such a logical extension of both beer making and illumination of manuscripts, that you can just, like, take both of those and just meld them together in this way that makes complete sense.
You know, Every order is a little different, but for many of them, they are in the world earning money in some way, performing some service to the church or to society, either getting paid for it or taking collections, and then that's the money. And that it's that same business model. You know,
if it's
three
not
centuries
broke,
later,
don't fix it.
Exactly. It's worked since 1200, and here we are doing it in space. Like, that's just, I love that. I love that so much. And I very much do relate then to Edward as a fellow information professional. That sort of as soon as Garibaldi leaves, the first thing he does is, all right, computer, we're going to do a crime statistics cross-reference. I'm going to pull up future EBSCOhost, and I'm going to do search bracket title keyword. And I'm going to cross-reference Black Rose, Charles, / Charlie, mm-hmm. remove this versus that, run search, like, again, as a library professional, that also spoke to me. Like, this is a guy who knows his stuff. And I love that Theo is great at chess.
Well, you'd have a lot of time to practice, I would assume.
But I mean, but you've got this, you know, justice, mercy, revenge. Mm-hmm. You know, that, I mean, that's a fairly common discussion point. I think they handle that very well. And then you're throwing in this idea of forgiveness.
Yeah.
And what can be forgiven and can't be forgiven. And sort of as we sort of poked around that, if you can't remember it, can you confess it? I'm sure somewhere in the Jesuit training, that question must have come up. I'm not asking you to remember every detail, but
no, I couldn't speak for the brothers at school, but yeah, but Theo's response is the correct response. If yeah. it's God knows, so if you're exactly. sorry, you're sorry. So mm-hmm.
in the death scene, again, back to JMS talking about it, in that death scene, the last rites that Theo performs for Edward is a slightly shorter version, sort of yeah. that edited for time. But JMS also said he changed the words a little bit just to reflect the fact that in 2260, they wouldn't be using the 1980
right.
version of
no.
the of the rites. They would have been updated a couple of times.
They'd be on Vatican IV.
Yeah.
And it would be a little bit different. So the wording is a little bit different, but it is certainly the sentiment in many of the words of the sort of a shorter version of the last rites.
Right.
You know, again, that attention to detail.
Yeah. And the things that would have probably normally been cut to make a more sort of sanitized, generalized mm-hmm. version are not cut. The importance of making sure that you specifically say that your sins are absolved, I believe mm-hmm. is the exact word that he uses, that the apostolic see
right.
is specifically called on. There are very specific aspects of that are the important parts, and those are the unchanged parts.
And like you said, Chris, he doesn't have a cross in his room. He has a crucifix.
Yeah.
Again, that's an attention to detail.
Yeah, and I don't know if people that aren't Catholic realize that. So, mm-hmm. but it's, I don't know. It's just one of those things you learn going yeah. through the Jesuit school system.
Yeah. yeah. And it's an important distinction, because when you mention Gethsemane, it's like, okay, well, this is going to be about Christianity.
Yeah.
And then you start it and you're like, oh, no, this is about Catholicism. Oh, this is about monastic Catholicism, Cistercian monastic Catholicism. Like, it gets down to that very, very, very specific and granular theology, and then plays it true and honestly.
Yeah. If this was handled in any other show, let's take the science fiction aspect out of it completely. And if this was handled as just this person lost their memory and then decided that they wanted to have a new life because they didn't know who they were, and they did it on name whatever your favorite Big Three yeah. channel well, primetime drama
it's a crime show.
Yeah. yeah. Or yeah. even X-Files. Let's say it was X-Files yeah. and some ghost took his memories or whatever.
Yeah. But it most of the time it would have been the generic Christianity that is usually portrayed on TV. Mm-hmm. And I can, you know, and I think that's done to not alienate anybody or to call attention to a specific sect.
Right.
But you kind of lose a little bit when you're trying to placate all sides, mm-hmm. I guess is the best expression I can use for that. The more drilled down that you do make something, granted, it's not going to affect everybody the same, but it does create a verisimilitude where that group that realizes that that's their specific branch of Christianity is really going to be able to get more out of it. Even if you're not, you're still going to be able to get something out of it. Even if you're in, I'm sure even the atheists that were watching the show were able to get something out of it too, because it does ask that other philosophical question, take the religious aspect out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And by getting so specific, they are able to address things that are so broad, because through the use of the death of personality as a plot point, they are able to talk at the exact same time about capital punishment, rehabilitation, the ethics of personhood. Those are three really, really, really big topics that on
big
another
philosophical
show, those would all been different episodes. It would have been like, okay, well, let's talk about whether or not rehabilitation is possible. Let's talk about whether or not you can be held responsible for your own actions if you don't remember them. Let's talk about what makes you you. If you know, do you always have to be responsible for your own past actions? Is capital punishment wrong? Should there, like...
Is it even capital punishment, though?
Well, that's the thing. And that's the thing. That's a question, because Garibaldi specifically says it's not capital punishment. Yeah. So I don't like it. Like, he specifically comes out and says, like, no.
Ever the realist, ever the cynic.
Yeah, and on television says, we never should have got rid of the electric chair. It's like, okay, like, that's a really strong stance to take.
Not if you know Jerry Doyle.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
That is true. But to be honest about that, to say, like, to not go, oh, and we should always forgive everyone because obviously everything is fine and all is permitted. And for Garibaldi to be like, nope, this is too soft. Mm-hmm. And for Edward to say, this is too cruel. And to sort of see both of those sides and go, okay. There's a lot of things that are happening in this. Edward's confession, which we did not specifically mention in the rundown because it's really hard to explain.
Yeah.
But after he has discovered who he used to be, when Theo finds him before he goes to the chapel, there is a scene where he is in the hallway and on the other side of a grate is Theo. And again, nothing in television is an accident. So the fact that there is a framing light on the other side of that grate that puts a graded shadow pattern over his face, and that when you reverse from the two sides of the scene, that there's always that graded pattern on the other, it's a confessional booth. And in that, Edward has the most painful line that I think JMS could have ever written. It's so exquisitely beautiful. They say it's humane and merciful, but do you know what it's like to wake up one day and learn that you are a monster? How can I confess my sins if I don't even know what they are? The kind of internal turmoil that creates, and again, bringing that down to the personal, of not even saying, let's talk about in this world where telepathy exists, how would that be used in like a court of law? Would that be a thing that's used? If it's a punishment, how is it administered? How do they, you know, conceptualize that? What is the news media perception? What are other characters' perception of this thing? But to go all the way down to, how does it actually affect the person? Like, that's genius.
There's a lot that prospective storytellers, certainly script writers in TV, could learn from Babylon 5 and from JMS. We're about in the middle of his run where he wrote something like 70 consecutive episodes. I mean, it's a crazy number of episodes that he was 100% responsible for. And one of the lessons is, they teach this in writing school, but here you see it, is that M was hinting at, the more specific makes it the more universal. In storytelling, it one thing I wanted to talk about on this sort of idea of, again, general, and maybe how other shows or other places sort of deal with these. And I've talked about this before here on this show, but I can be pretty mellow about portrayals of God in pop culture. And just because, God's a word that has a range of meanings. And we even differentiate it sometimes by capitalizing it and non-capitalizing it, right? I mean, we understand that the word just, it means a lot of things. So I actually try not to get too hung up on a movie or a show in terms of how they handle God. Sort of, to me, that's sort of a general, I can accept that as a general term. But Jesus, on the other hand,
Well, yeah,
that's a different situation for me. And this is not a, you know, just again, it's not a general reference. I mean, you're making specific point about the centrality of what I believe, and certainly with Gethsemane there, the path to the cross. And this is just laid out so well. You know, the first time I saw it, I remember going from nervous, right? How are they going to mess this story up, right? To being just beyond pleased, blown away. So, you know, again, you got to give them a lot of credit for doing research, getting it right, presenting faithful people and faith itself in a fair way. And that's really all I ask. That's all I need. I don't need perfect. I don't need lining up 100%. I can checklist everything that's, you know, that I believe. I just want fair. And this was the exhibit A of fairly treating religious content.
The whole show has done that too. It's treated religious content, sociological content, militaristic content, historical content. Everything is treated fairly. And that's why, I mean, even at the end of the episode, we mentioned Garibaldi, but you have that other counterpoint when him and Delenn are speaking. And, you know, everybody gets represented in this, you know.
Right.
Your belief is, at the end of that episode, you might be siding with Sheridan, you might be siding with Brother Theo, you might be siding with Delenn, you might be siding with Garibaldi. But all of those viewpoints are going to be expressed, and it does let you draw your own conclusions.
Yeah. And it sort of says, just like religion is not going to go away in 250 years. Questions of personhood, ethics,
humanity,
life and death penalty, and like criminal activity, those are also not going to go away in 250 years. We're still going to be having debates about what is humane punishment, what is inhumane punishment, what things require certain forms of punishment. Is it enough to lock someone away? Is it enough to wipe their memories? Is it too much to wipe their memories? Is it too much to kill them? Is it not enough to kill them? If death of personality hurts them more, do they deserve that? Raises all these questions and does not give you answers. And says, no, these are hard questions. These are hard questions that we are trying to figure out in the modern world, that they are trying to figure out in their modern world.
Yeah.
And we're going to be having these discussions for a long time because there aren't easy answers.
No, if it was easy, then Aristotle and Plato would have figured it all out thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
That's true. You know, I wanted to harken back to one of the earlier episodes where it seemed like it's basically, I think it's maybe episode 3 or 4. It's the Jehovah's Witness episode with the blood transfusion there's a certain type of medical procedure, but that's what it's playing on. And even in that, even though you could see the reference, that had a gut punch of an ending it as well.
Oh,
because
that one kills me every time I watch
how
it.
You thought you we've seen this on 15 other TV shows, right? We know how it's going to end.
Yeah.
The surprise. You think it's going to end happy.
Not well.
It does not.
Not well is how it ends.
At this point, okay, you know, I'm in on how you're handling this.
Mm-hmm. And there are certainly issues with that particular episode. Yeah, I think it's pretty much everyone's least liked episode.
I love, like, Dr. Franklin, so I don't hate that episode.
Let me say, Dr. Franklin, in that episode especially, boy, does he play the arrogant surgeon to perfection.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, wow.
Yeah. There's moments in that episode where you do see things that would be more fleshed out with Franklin over later seasons.
Right.
But I think there are definitely criticisms to be made that maybe his character wasn't as fully set, because there is a lot of arrogance of my beliefs are better than your beliefs, which doesn't really jive with what we come to know of him later on, with sort of like the way that his own like spiritual practice works. But as a concept episode, even in that moment, even if there are certain flaws or sort of like, well, you know, JMS would have done this more subtly later on, or it would have been a little bit more polished or a little bit more nuanced. Even in that episode, it goes, oh, okay, so we are going to treat religiosity with the very honest, like sincere deep-seated, world-shattering nature that it has. And it's like, well, how would you react if someone violated your wishes, if this went against your deeply held beliefs, which would win out?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is not pleasant.
Yeah, but probably realistic.
And you know what? I think about that now. It's I can't believe I'm going to say this, but oh my God, you could almost even see that as one of the see it as an anti-vax parable nowadays, which is terrifying to me.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So
I rewatched that episode very, very recently, and I was like, oh, this is not a surprise. I know exactly how this is going to happen because
yeah.
it happens.
Yeah. Interesting.
Good sci-fi, good speculative fiction is always timely. So
yeah.
That's true.
That is very
sadly.
True.
Yeah.
Speaking of timeliness in science fiction, can we talk about the fact that Brother Edward has a podcast? And then he goes and interviews Delenn. Because that was my first thought, as I was like, God, he's got a podcast. This is awesome.
Maybe in the future it won't be true crime podcast. It'll be religious podcast. I'm hoping, but that's
yes,
probably
please, we're coming. Please.
We're coming for your throne, Serial.
Of course, in this case, Chris, it's also a true crime podcast.
Ooh, bah, bah, bah. What a twist.
Crossing the streams.
That is hilarious. That's an awesome point.
As soon as he says, oh, can I record this? And he pulls out a tape deck. I was like, yes! Excellent! Welcome to the Comparative Religion Pod.
The names of God. No. I did like, back to Dr. Franklin. They do sort of pay him off a number of years later. He sort of ends up going on a vision quest.
Yeah.
So cool.
Walkabout.
What a cool episode, too.
Within the framework of the show. So again, all of these different characters with their beliefs and with their, if you talk about arcs and changes, they're not in this episode, but some of the other aliens from Jakar and Londo, et cetera,
oh man.
The changes that these characters go through, the character arcs are amazing. And, you know, we're just sort of touching on that now, but it's an amazing show.
Yeah.
That the character arcs, especially, even after the Shadow War ends, okay, there's a little bit of peace now, but then what happens right after that?
Yep.
Same mm-hmm. old prejudices flare up, and the same old conflicts just rear their ugly heads. And Londo is probably my favorite character.
Yeah.
And I feel he's a bastard in many ways, but he's honest about it. And the ending of this show, and all the, you know, the extra back matter with the, you know, the TV movies and everything. Has there ever been a more Shakespearean character than him? I feel so bad for Londo. I don't know. And I know he's a terrible person, but my heart rips when you find out where he ends up. It's terrible.
Yeah.
And amazing.
I actually wanted to go back and talk a little bit about Jesus, because... Oh.
Not Londo. Okay.
No, not Londo.
A lot of people get them confused.
Yes.
You know.
I actually wanted to talk about Jakar and Delenn for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Because a thing that is very cool with JMS is that as an atheist, he is respectful of other religious beliefs and of the way that religiosity impacts people's lives as part of their character. He also, like you said, is very Shakespearean. And he understands the literary mm-hmm. nature of, like, the Jesus
the
archetype,
Christ figure.
Yeah. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about some Christ imagery,
mm-hmm.
because this episode, in my mind, sort of really helps hammer home that imagery. Because
yes.
when all you get is the imagery, sometimes you go like, okay, you're missing out on some of the personhood.
Mm-hmm.
But JMS actually does give you both in sort of separate ways. So I wanted to talk a little bit actually about Valen. Because in the discussion that Edward and Delenn have about Minbari religion, at the very, very end of it, Lanier sneaks in this little teeny tiny line at the end that says he was a Minbari, not born of Minbari.
Mm-hmm.
And that, as a reference to sort of an Immaculate Conception event,
mm-hmm.
could have been like, oh, okay, so this is going to be our analog. We're not going to get real Jesus. We're going to get analog Jesus. We're going to get space Jesus. And then the fact that it doesn't do that, the fact that it uses that imagery but then actually does a different thing with the character of Valen that is more true to the mm-hmm. Mimbari theology
right.
is super cool. That he's able to use that sort of literary sort of phrasing mm-hmm. that it goes like a Mimbari not born of Mimbari. It's like, oh, okay. So it's okay. Yeah. There's some Macbeth there, and there's some born of man, not a man, God and man in one sort of ideology. But then what they do with Valen, which spoilers, there's a lot,
mm-hmm.
is not that, and is actually more true to the Mimbari theology that's spelled out in that sort of podcast episode where they're talking about the nature of souls
mm-hmm.
and the way that Mimbari views souls as being collective, and that the soul is, the way that Lanier puts it, is a projection, that when you shine a light at a wall, you see a circle on the wall, but the light is not a circle.
Mm-hmm.
The light is a beam, but you can only see it reflected off of matter. And again, that could have been shorthand for Buddhism. That could mm-hmm. have been shorthand for Zen or Hinduism, but it's not. It's its own thing, and it's treated as its own thing within the narrative and by the other characters.
So it uses these references, but they aren't one-to-one analogies. It's not, we don't get space Jesus, space Buddha, space, right.
Yeah, it's Valen.
Mm-hmm, right.
And Valen is similar to certain other religious figures.
But it's because, fully fleshed out.
And because it's a literary parallel.
Right.
That he's,
right.
He's able to sort of like compartmentalize those things where he's like, we're going to take literary biblical things and do some literary mirroring with that. But for the characters, that is a deeply held like spiritual right. and physical belief that is vital to their character. But then me as the writer, I'm also going to use it as a leitmotif. And the fact mm-hmm. that he does both is like awesome.
I can't even add to that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I understood it.
That's the comparative religion training rearing its head at this point. And I just, I love that podcast episode. That little scene that they have talking about what is the core
right.
of your beliefs. And I'm sure that you appreciated yes. this as you were talking about earlier, that the core of Brother Edward's beliefs and Delenn
mm-hmm.
drills down. She's like, not the tradition, all the way down to the emotional core. What is it? And
what is it to you?
Yes.
What is it for you?
And Brother Edwards perfectly sums that up. That it is courage. It is standing in that moment before not just the cross, but leading up to the mm-hmm. cross. That is what is so vital.
And he specifically calls that a very human moment.
Yeah,
I think which is an important aspect of that as well.
For you personally, what is the defining moment of your belief? Not the history, the doctrines, but the emotional core of it.
On the night before our Lord was crucified, he spent the night alone in the Garden of Gethsemane. And he knew that they were going to come for him, and in a moment of weakness, he asked if this cup could pass from him, if he could be spared the pain and death that would come with the morning. And of course, the cup would not pass, and the soldiers would come to Gethsemane. But he did not have to be there when they arrived. He could have chosen to leave, to postpone the inevitable for a few hours or even days. He knew what would happen, but he chose to stay, to sacrifice himself, and thus atone for the sins of others. It's a very fragile human moment, and I've often thought about that night. And I honestly don't know if I would have had the courage to have stayed.
If you're a fan of science fiction or just really well-told drama, you should be watching this show. If your proclivities are for things that touch on the philosophical, the metaphysical, or the spiritual, this is an episode to seek out, along with the Dr. Franklin episode that we mentioned earlier. That's definitely believers. Worth a look.
I think that one's just called Believers.
Believers, yes. See, I can't.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since I knew all the episode titles. But those two are ones that you should absolutely seek out. And if it does, if just watch this one, watch Passing Through Gethsemane, and if it tickles you, you will get a lot of enjoyment out of this show, even if not all of the disparate plot threads might be to your liking. You will find at least one character where you're going to want to follow them in their journey through completion. If you
and they will be on a journey. Whatever character you latch onto,
you will get an ending for them. And
even if it's just Garibaldi's disappearing hair throughout, you can always tell what season you're in.
Yeah,
like Garibaldi's hair.
Follow the hairline.
Yep.
is quickly becoming Bruce Willis during the course of that.
The definition of an Irish hairline on Mr. Doyle. And not to bury the lead or anything, but if you're a big Tolkien fan, you may want to seek the show.
You should
out
check
as well.
It out.
Yeah, that's a good point as well, because JMS certainly is not shy about those references. And
Aragorn is a major character in season 3. He's on the box art.
Yeah, basically.
And his name is Marcus. He is Aragorn. He's a dirty, beardy man, ranger boy. Like, it's not
They do call them rangers.
It's nothing.
Yes, they are rangers, and they also have a brooch that looks like the brooch from The Lord of the Rings. So,
yep.
Yeah.
And they're human Mimbari trained. It's a thing.
Pulling in the World War II references on the battle. On the battle stuff, the war stuff. I mean, there's so much there. Sometimes I get in trouble for saying this because I know that Straczynski, in the comic book world, does not have a great reputation all the time. But to me, I give him a lifetime pass because of Babylon 5.
Oh,
it's like anything else he wants to do. I mean, I might not praise it. But I'm not going to go out of my way to criticize anything else he does.
No.
We'll point out that as of this recording here, JMS has a memoir that he has recently released.
Really?
And the audio version is read by Peter Jurasik, Mondo.
Oh.
That has got to be great.
I have to track that down.
I believe it's called Becoming Superman or something very close to that.
Oh.
So that is our recommendation for Chris personally.
Okay.
If anyone else is interested.
Well, then I'll leave a recommendation as well. If you kind of cleave to the religious stuff and you liked what he does with religion, then you should seek out a trade paperback of his miniseries called Midnight Nation. It is a deeply religious journey.
Yes. I have some of those issues on the old quarter bin database. So
they are
interesting.
You get through it, you'll want to cover it. It is well worth it, and it is again a very religious, spiritual piece written by somebody who is not religious, and you'll definitely enjoy it.
One thing I saw in the reading from JMS about this. About this particular episode, the Gethsemane episode, was he talked about forgiveness, and he talked about his own struggles with that. He said, "I cannot forgive," which makes the notion of writing a character who can forgive momentarily attractive, because it allows me to explore in great detail something of which I am utterly incapable. I cannot fly, so I would write of birds and starships and kites. I cannot play an instrument, so I would write of composers and dancers. And I cannot forgive, so I would write of priests and monks and Minbari. That's good.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, Chris,
for
joining us to talk about this awesome episode.
Of a really awesome show.
Yeah.
If you could tell the listeners where it is that they can find the podcasts that you do.
Okay. Right. I am on the Two True Freaks Network. So if you search for Two True Freaks, you will find it on any podcatcher that I think they're on everything. If not, you can just go to the website and twotruefreaks.com. You can find everything. I am on Cast Protection, which is a show that covers the Netflix original series Stranger Things. So we do an episode by episode and some ancillary stuff for that. I am on The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror, where we cover old horror movies.
Still, like, the best named podcast in history.
The longest podcast name in history. I am on Get Back to the Wrestling, which covers professional wrestling. I am occasionally on Weekly Heroics, which I haven't had time to dedicate to, but I've got a whole bunch of back episodes there, and I pop up from time to time on certain things where we cover superhero television. And I'm a frequent guest on Back to the Bins, because I'm always available.
And I am a frequent guest on Back to the Bins, and occasionally we've been on the same show.
We have. It was fungible.
Oh, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
I couldn't have had a better afternoon if you had paid me, which you did not.
Just to clarify.
No money.
I have been looking forward to this for quite a while, and it was a pleasure to be able to podcast with you. I really appreciated it.
Oh, thank you. And thank you, listeners, for tuning into this niche show. We value each and every one of you.
And wherever you come from within the Big Ten of the Christian world, or if you identify as being from outside that world, or if you just don't know what you are or where you belong, you can come here. All are welcome. And until next time, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.
While you're waiting for the next podcast episode, check out our websites. DarknessToLight.blogspot.com contains reviews, essays, and other similar ramblings.
And DarknessToLight.tumblr.com, which contains some of that material, as well as top tens, cool photographs, memes, and religious puns. We also run a general interest comic book podcast network, Relatively Geeky. That content can be found at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com or by searching iTunes for Relatively Geeky.
Let us know what you think of this topic, this episode, or this podcast in general. Feel free to send your thoughts to us at darknesstolight@gmail.com. We would also appreciate any ratings or reviews left for the podcast in the iTunes store to help like-minded people find us.
Our intro, outro, and promo music is by Anderson Kale. Search iTunes to purchase their music.
Thanks for listening.